Committee on Budget, Public Safety Subcommittee, for Wednesday, June 29th, 2005. We will be in public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 850, the address confidentiality program. We will also be in work session on Senate Bill 5618, the Oregon State Police Budget Bill. We will be in public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 954, the Oregon State Police Fee Bill. And we will be in work session on Senate Bill 5628, the Oregon State Police Fee Bill. We will begin with Senate Bill 5618, the Oregon State Police Budget Bill. We are in work session. We may need to recess at roughly 1:45 or so in order to take up a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 850 when those parties arrive. And then after that, we would go right back into work session on the Oregon State Police Budget Bill. With that said, Mr. Wilson, would you like to, or would you please start walking us through the materials for Senate Bill 5618?
I would like to, too, Mr. Chair.
After all the hard work.
Again, as usual, there's a memo along with a set of spreadsheets, and I'll do one division at a time to keep the continuity of the subject matter together. I don't think I need to go through what the state police do. We've had a lot of presentation. Both of you are have a good idea. In terms of the major changes to the governor's recommended budget, in this budget that's being recommended by LFO is, first of all, we propose using or reversing the governor's proposal to use $70 million in lottery funding, which is assumed to be generated from the expansion to line games. He proposed using lottery funding. The plan in this budget is to reverse that and use general fund in this budget. The proposal by the governor to reduce 21 detectives in the criminal investigations division is reversed, and they are funded in this budget, along with 8 detectives and 1 forensic scientist that are added for the meth initiative. And I should note that both the House and the Senate have additional funding plans set aside additional funds for the meth initiative that are not included in this budget. There are certificates of participation being proposed to purchase 171 new intoxilizers. There's additional funding to provide to identification services to fill that significant gap in that program. And there are the 2 fee bills on the agenda also relate to that program. There are reinvestments into various parts of the department, partially by the elimination of 20 trooper positions and also from savings that you've already seen in Department of Corrections, Department of Justice, and other public safety agency budgets. And I'll go into some more detail going through through the materials. And there's also resources added in the state fire marshal budget to increase community fire prevention education, fire net communications and maintenance, and some deputy fire marshal positions. The first, Madam Chair, the first division to take a look at is the Patrol Services Division. The spreadsheets, I'll go through this rather quickly and hit the high points. Package 090 is the governor's proposal to use lottery funds. That is reversed in Package 815 later in this division. On the next page, which is page 11 of 43, on the tables, Package 101 eliminates 14 positions, including 8 cadets and 5 sergeants. The agency is moving away from the use of cadets. So the resources where the cadets were utilizing have been added to the temporary employee lines, and the agency will has and will continue to plan to employ retired sworn troopers for many of the functions, many of which are seasonal in nature, in this division and in Fish and Wildlife Division. Package 102 establishes a position to operate the towing impound program. There's a fee increase that the agency has increased in the biennium, which is also ratified in Senate Bill 5628, which is further down the agenda. Package 811, you'll see this package in every single division, which are what we'll term technical adjustments, but it does spread the smart savings or smart buy savings and reallocates rent in almost every division. The reallocation of rent is general fund neutral. And in some divisions, there's other things in this package which I will highlight. Package 812 is a package you'll see in a number of divisions. This is a package that redistributes staff and associated costs from the Human Resources Division to the various field divisions. And what it does is recognize the current management and reporting structure of the field. All that had been centralized. The staff, the command staff, and the support staff, and rent and other things had been centralized in the Human Resources Division. The department would like to reallocate that out to the various divisions where the spending decisions are made, and it should increase accountability as a result of that. So you'll see this package in a number of places. One of the other things that is happening in this package, again, sort of lining where management decisions are made, the 15 positions that deal with Capitol Mall and Capitol Building Security, as well as the Dignitary Protection Unit, is transferred from the Criminal Investigation Division to the Patrol Division, and that reflects the current management structure. Package 813 is probably the package that is creating the most angst among both the agency and others in the building. This package eliminates 20 positions in the patrol, which are 20 trooper positions, and the associated services and supplies with that. That saves $3 million, which is reinvested into service and supply holes, as well as holes elsewhere in the agency. And this is a $2 million reduction in this package because $1 million of that is reinvested into services and supply holes in the patrol division, in large part driven by gasoline prices and the recognition that gas prices are significantly higher than what is currently budgeted. And since gasoline prices are a significant cost, this agency, we want to make sure there is enough for gas and vehicle maintenance.
I'd like to stop at this point and talk a bit more about this package and the impact of the reduction on the ability of the department to conduct its law enforcement activities. What we are calling a reinvestment in services and supplies in effect has the result of diminishing law enforcement activity. And so, Superintendent, and good afternoon.
Afternoon,
if you would, again, just for the record, help us establish some clarity around what will be the impact of the reduction of the 20 troopers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ron Ricker, Superintendent of the State Police. We certainly do have infrastructure needs throughout the agency, and one of the things we'd ask this legislative assembly to do is help us deal with some of those problems. But we also have a very huge problem in terms of the staffing of the patrol division, which, as you all understand in this room, 329 sworn officer positions in the patrol division in the 0305 budget will reduce to 309 in the 0507 budget. And while, as Mr. Wilson described, some of that money may stay in the patrol division, we'll be buying gasoline instead of officers, or we'll be buying other infrastructure needs outside the patrol division in the rest of the department. So this package, in fact, would mean 20 fewer uniformed officers to serve the people of the state of Oregon. And as we talked about in our main hearings for this committee, subcommittee. That is already a very, very understaffed division. The risks to the officers themselves due to the inavailability of backup and just our ability to respond to the needs of the public in terms of how many hours does it take if someone's broken down on the side of the highway, how long does it take for a trooper to come by or to get there if the call comes in. We have tens of thousands of calls for coming in now to our dispatch centers about road rage or aggressive drivers or other kinds of complaints that we cannot respond to today. So a reduction in the patrol division certainly means further exacerbating a problem that is at critical levels before this session. So 20 fewer troopers is not quite a 10% cut. It must be a little over 5% of this total staffing. We're at a place, Madam Chair and members of the committee, where the average staffing level around the department at most of our field offices in terms of what we have today, I don't think we can even talk about 25 years ago in terms of some benchmark, because it's difficult to draw sort of a real line between the way we were staffed basically a generation ago compared to where we are today, except by considering things like the state of the population, the number of cars on the highway, and so on. But I think a real way to look at it is there are still about 500 people a year being killed on Oregon's roadways. As I testified to in our main session, we can make a difference on that. We can drive that number down by putting troopers on the highway and having them out there doing what they should be doing to protect the people of Oregon. That's our goal. That's what we know we could do if we had the resources. So to go backwards by 20 people thwarts our ability to provide a safer, albeit not as safe as we would like, still even further threatens the public safety of the people of the state of Oregon.
Just to follow up, there was also testimony from the agency as we were addressing the methamphetamine problem in the state, the huge problem in the state. There was testimony, as I recall, about the increased drug trafficking along the I-5 corridor. And there was testimony that suggested that having troopers available for enforcement around yes. this trafficking was also critical. And so my concern is that as we are putting together, as the legislature is putting together a package and a strategy to address methamphetamine epidemic, are we not removing a tool that is needed in the fight against methamphetamine?
Yes, Madam Chair, we would be. Nationally, statistics would support the conclusion that patrol work by uniformed police officers engaged in, and they do many things, primary among them is traffic enforcement, but that patrol officers actually make more arrests, interdict or intercept more narcotics, traveling up and down our highways and in our communities than drug task forces do all combined. The officers are out there. That's where, you know, plenty of crimes are being committed, either in support of crime that supports drug trafficking or the actual transportation of drugs or money related to that drug traffic. And it's a critical tool. You bet these officers are doing great things, you know, when they're in a position to do it. And, yes, we'd be going the wrong direction there as well.
Well, with that said, Superintendent and Senator Devlin, Mr. Wilson, I am going to just be on record saying that I'm concerned that this is a package 813 that needs to be revisited before we come to full agreement on the Oregon State Police budget. I'm prepared, of course, to move forward today in passing the budget out, but I'm just trying to make a point that this is a conversation that needs to continue with the chair on the House side and the chair on the Senate side, until, especially given that we have a methamphetamine package that is still being fleshed out.
Yes.
And until we gain total clarity, we need to keep this piece in front of us. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share your concerns and would send the same message to both chairs. I don't want to put the superintendent in a bad position, but there is a question here, and obviously this is not the kind of thing that we can actually change today. One of the things that the governor did was he eliminated 21 detective positions. One of the things that we did was to restore the 21 detective positions. It actually didn't make much sense to us, given the emphasis that was going to be on methamphetamines at the time. But if you had to make your choice between the restoration of some of those detectives and the restoration of those patrol officers, just not putting the superintendent in it, where would you draw the line?
Madam Chair, excuse me, Senator Devlin, I was actually asked this question a couple of days ago in the House, and I frankly appreciate the opportunity to share my personal opinion, just based on my experience in the profession. And one of the members of the House committee made some references, like being asked, which of your kids do you like the most? And I wouldn't use that analogy, but it's like, do you need your right hand or your left? You really need them both. The detectives are doing critical work in support of or in response to crimes against children, major crime team partnerships at the local county level, where nobody's got the resources, not the state, not the city, not the county, to independently investigate these the most serious crimes that happen in our communities. So you form a team and people pool their resources and you work collaboratively to do together what you could not do alone. And that's what those 21 detective positions would be assigned to, those kind of cases. And the work is critical. Some of them would be narcotics officers in direct support of the meth initiative that the chair is mentioning and you're mentioning. But some of them would not be. And, at the same time, I got to flip to the other side of our, one of the other aspects of our responsibilities is the safety of the roadways, where hundreds of people are being unnecessarily killed, and where we know we can prevent some of that, and where officers themselves that are out there in the emergency response, first response division of the department, responding to things occurring right now, as opposed to detectives who respond to stuff that happened an hour ago or last week. It's a very difficult choice to make. But having said all that, if I were to assign, and we had X number of troopers total in the department, I would put those 21 criminal division people on patrol, because they can do a lot of the same work in a uniform that they do in the criminal division, plus they can do more than that. They can respond to the most urgent needs of the community and these crises where they're occurring in real time. And I think if you have to choose between if you're going to do that, or if you're going to do sort of after the fact investigative work, I don't want to have to make the choice, but if I had to, I'd put them out on patrol. And then the final reason for that is the detectives are seldom, sometimes, but far less frequently, in a position of being out there doing their work without any backup. These uniformed patrol officers are going places where most of our friends and neighbors wouldn't want to go alone, or even with somebody else. And we're sending these troopers out there in some very, very isolated areas all across the state. And they're going far too many times by themselves. So in part just to protect the other officers, I'd put the 21 in the patrol division.
Well, Superintendent, I think your response is in alignment with where the public is. The public expects to be protected. And the public also expects that law enforcement is going to be focused on preventing crime. And our policy choices need to reinforce that. And the budget decisions we make need to also affirm that. So I appreciate the way that you have responded. Let's move on to Package 815.
Madam Chair, Package 815 just reverses the lottery funding proposal that the governor made and returns the funding for, in this case, 300 troopers before the reduction back to general fund. I do want to note that there is one budget note on page 3 of the memo. The budget note really has sort of two parts to it, but it's contained in one budget note. The first part of it requests or instructs, in probably my case tells, that the Department of Administrative Services, plus the assistance of the Legislative Fiscal Office, is instructed to study the potential costs, benefits, impacts of transferring the patrol division or some functions of the patrol division to county sheriffs. The second part of that budget note, Tora, about two-thirds of the way down, requests that or instructs that the same analysis done by DAS, so with the assistance of LFO, take a look at the benefits, costs, and impacts of transferring enforcement and the other responsibilities for the staff of the Fish and Wildlife Division to either ODFW or some other state agency.
Mr. Superintendent, do you have a brief comment on this budget note?
Yes, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, very briefly. And I responded to the first part of this budget note in my testimony at the end of session, and I provided that to the committee in writing, and I trust you still have it. And if not, I'll get you another copy of it. And I'll just say briefly that, you know, certainly we acknowledge the budget note, and we will work to support the requested studies. I'll just add, we're proud of the work that we do, the level of service we're providing to the people and the natural resources of the state. And, you know, because that's what it's all about, we certainly welcome any analysis that could enhance the delivery of these services. And we'll work with DAS and LFO to the extent we're asked to in the course of these studies.
Very good. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This budget note obviously has been approved by both chairs, and I have no problem with the study. However, I would like to put on the record that I do have concerns about the comparability in terms of training, in terms of the focus of training between state troopers and sheriffs in some of these areas. I also have a concern that while sometimes studies can look good on paper, this is no fault of anyone, either on the county side or the state side. But we have long been battling different interpretations about what our commitment should be in community corrections and what their commitment should be in community corrections. And I frankly don't want to enter into any agreement in the future, even if a study would show that there would be some benefits, unless it was clearly defined and both sides were in agreement on a long-term basis what their respective respective requirements were under any agreement.
Excellent comment, Senator Devlin. And moving on, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, excuse me, members of the subcommittee, the next division is the Criminal Services Division.
Could I interject here once? Madam
Chair,
do you want me to do a motion at the end of each division, or do you want me to wait till the end?
We'll do one at the end.
Okay.
Criminal Services Division, back to the worksheet or tables. Package 090, this has been alluded to before, this eliminates a total of 27 positions, 21 of which are the detectives that have been discussed before this point. The remaining six positions are related to the Tobacco Tax Task Force, excuse me, and this basically returns the level of staffing for this task force to the levels that were established after the 2001 session. The 2003 session expanded that, and the governor and this budget recommends returning those to the level as in 2001-03. As I said before, the 21 positions are recommended to be restored in this package. Package 101 has a number of reclasses in it that have been approved and are internally financed. It also increases an additional $100,000 for arson investigations. This is funded through the fire insurance premium tax. You'll see other increases from this funding source when you get to the fire marshal's office. And you also saw significant increases in the DPSST budget for regional fire training from this revenue source. There's also a position or transferred position in this. I should note that there were more than one transferred position here. The two of the positions that were transferred out of this were not they were transferred out but never created. So just for your knowledge, but since there isn't any additional revenues available at this time, we have not recreated or recommended recreation of those positions. Package 111 deals with the high-intensity drug trafficking area program, or the HIDA program. This adds almost $1.5 million to the program and continues the existing three limited-duration positions for another biennium. This brings the total funding of this program to almost $6 million. And keep in mind that the majority of this funding does go out to local communities and local drug teams and such. Package 122 is the methamphetamine initiative by the governor. This establishes eight positions in this division for investigation and intelligence-related assistance to local drug teams, as well as a number of other functions that around the meth problem. There's an additional position in the forensics division when I get there, and I'll explain that one. Number 152 is related to the decision by the co-chairs not to establish the office of the Homeland Security agency. The governor's budget had the general fund for a portion of the Office of Public Safety and Security, being the general fund being placed in the new Homeland Security Agency, and then basically contracting the state police for sworn officers for positions. Since that agency is not being created in this budget plan, the general fund is put back into this budget. There isn't any net general fund impact to the total state budget or any staffing changes as a result.
And so to our knowledge then, to your knowledge, Mr. Wilson, the legislation that would have created the Office of Homeland Security is dead on the House side?
Madam Chair, I think that is, I can't say it's dead. I'm not the politician in the room. Things have a habit of being rising up toward the end of session, so I'm not sure if it is dead or not, but this plan and the co-chair's plan assumes that that bill will not pass at this time. I must say, though, that the way this budget has been put together, if it does happen, it's relatively easy to recreate the governor's proposal to do that.
All right.
So if the budget or that bill does pass or something along those lines passes, it is relatively easy to recreate.
That's what I wanted to get to. All right, great. And Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify that, too, in terms of the enabling legislation. It's not passed, obviously, but my understanding is that the two co-chairs are in agreement on not setting up the separate division, and neither the House budget nor the Senate budget reflects setting up a separate division.
Madam Chair, Package 801 is the LFO technical adjustments that you'll see in every division. Package 811, what's different about this package or these technical adjustments is there is an additional $500,000 that have been identified that's available through seizures. What we are recommending is that $500,000 at this time be unscheduled. It is other funds. And until there's greater certainty in the court decisions that are hopefully coming down in the near future, as well as some legislation that has been moving, I'm not sure the status of it today, around the seizure laws. And so that once that solidifies and the eligible uses of the funding are identified under the current or under the law, that can be rescheduled by DAS and made available to the agency. Those funds do have limited uses, and some of the court decisions and the legislation and some federal discussions may alter how those funds or further restrict how those funds are used. Package 812 is the package that I've discussed before, which moves some of the field admin and staffing between the Human Resources Division and out into the field. In this case, these 15 positions that are lost in this package are the Capitol Mall, Capitol Building, and Dignitary Protection Units. Madam Chair, that is the numbers for the criminal division.
I'd like to establish one thing on the record, Mr. Wilson. The co-chair budget plan includes an additional $5.1 million general fund for the meth-related bills, as you note in your report. How much of the $5.1 million general fund is captured in the Oregon State Police budget?
Madam Chair, the 5.1 was put aside early in the process by both co-chairs. It doesn't necessarily affect this budget in any way. There is $1.2 million in a savings in the Human Resources Division that was never restored in the co-chair's budget, and whether that is available or not, I'm not sure for the method issue.
So, for example, again, just so we're all clear out here, Package 122, which establishes the 8 new positions for the governor's meth initiative, those are outside of the 5.1 million.
Yep.
Okay.
The next division is the forensic services division. On the again back to the worksheets package, there were no reductions made in the governor's budget in the 090 package. Package 101 reclasses a number of positions to better line up job responsibilities with the activities of the division. They've all been approved and are internally financed. We recommend the approval of that. Package 105 is related to the purchase of 171 new intoxilizers. These are machines that are placed across the state. The current set of machines are rather aged. They need a lot of repair, and spare parts are often hard to find. The 1.56 or the $1.6 million in this package are the proceeds from COPs being issued for this purpose, and the debt service issuance costs are in another division, which I'll point out when we get there. And it's our note just to make sure that folks understand that while the funds are here to purchase the intoxilizers, there is no additional money for training or installation of these.
The purchase, these are replacements. Is that correct from the testimony? Replacements for the old?
Yes, Madam Chair. These, and I would like to clarify, I'm not certain if Intoxilizer, which is the name of a manufacturer, is necessarily the same brand of machine we're going to be buying in the future. It may be, but this is the breath testing equipment for drivers under the influence to measure blood alcohol levels. So this is a plan to replace a very aged out inventory of machines far outlive their shelf life. They need to be replaced, and this will get that done. Then we have to train every police officer in the state of Oregon to use them.
Without the training dollars assigned for that purpose, how will you accomplish the training?
I'm not exactly sure what the answer to that is. The training dollars, it's not a huge sum. A little over $100,000 for the whole state. We'll figure out some way to make it work if we need to.
Madam Chair, maybe they can partner with DPSSC and with their regional training folks, if at all possible.
That makes sense.
Yes.
All right. Great.
Madam Chair, Package 106 is an increase in other fund limitation, just recognizing that there are some additional federal grants coming in from the National Institute of Justice, and much of this will be used to purchase equipment and supplies, much of it related to DNA. Package 122 is this division's counterpart to the meth initiative. This adds one forensic scientist position to process evidence collected from meth-related labs. If you add detectives and folks out there doing the work out in the field, that just means more stuff coming into the lab to analyze, and so that recognizes that that relationship.
And again, this new position is outside of the 5.1
million.
That
is right. It's included in this budget.
All right.
Package 801 are the PERS and AGs that are adjustments that are in every budget. Package 811, again, these are the technicals. What's unique in this package is the increase in both other fund and federal funds from carryover from existing burn grant funds. Actually, there are donations coming into the forensics division for DNA kits. I think there's roughly 100,000, that may be a little high. And then there's also National Institute of Justice grant funds for DNA-related kit supplies and overtime. Package 813, this is one of the investments, if that's a proper term to use. There's $1.1 million added to the SNS to purchase supplies and other costs and services and supplies. What the agency has said is that, and this is the case in some of the other divisions where the funds are being placed, that they would have had to hold positions vacant to fulfill these costs, and SNS costs are not only supplies, they're also, you know, the state government service charges, rents, and all the other things that you have to do to operate a state agency or a division within a state agency. And Madam Chair, that is the numbers for the forensics, and I do not have any other issues or budget notes for that division. The next office is the Medical Examiner's Division. There are a couple packages here. Package 116 establishes a new morgue attendant position as a state position that will be paid from contributions from the three metro area counties. This really does continue a relationship that is currently in place. And since they are moving into a state facility, I think they thought that this position should be really a state position and not a county position. And this recognizes that relationship. Package 801 are the AG and PERS adjustments. Package 811 is, in this case, just reallocation of rent between the divisions and the smart buy savings. And Madam Chair, that is the completion of the Medical Examiner's Division, and there are no further points to be made there. The next division, I'm on page 14 of 43, is the Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Division. Again, as in the patrol division, the governor proposed using lottery funds for a portion of the funding for this division. These would have been the expansion of the line games. I should note that this division already receives ballot measure 66 related lottery funding. This was an expansion to offset the general fund in this division. It should be noted that the general fund in this division is important because these troopers are also providing, you know, traditional law enforcement, which is more characteristics of folks like the patrol division, as needed. Their primary responsibility is fish and wildlife enforcement, but they are sworn and trained troopers, and they are often the only law enforcement people out there in rural areas of any, you know, close proximity to an emergency. Keep in mind that Package 815 will reverse what the governor is proposing here, returning this to funding to general fund. Package 8 or Package 101 reestablishes two trooper positions that are other funds that were mistakenly phased out during the budget development process. And it also eliminates a cadet position, and the funding for these will be other funds, and just like in the patrol division, there is going to be less reliance on the cadet type employee and more reliance on bringing back retired state troopers who have, you know, a much broader range of training and expertise than a cadet does. 801 is the analyst's recs for the PERS and AG adjustments. Package 811, what is unique in this package in these more technical adjustments is additional limitation for a National Marine Fisheries Services grant. It's a continuing grant, but there are more funds available than what was thought to be at the time when the governor's budget was put together. Package 812 is, again, the transfer of the field-related command and support staff and other costs associated with the field, moving those from the human resources to the various patrol, criminal, and fish and wildlife divisions. Again, this is a cost-neutral or a general fund-neutral across the agency. And finally, package 815 is the reversal of governor's proposal to use lottery funds for a portion of this division, returning it back to general fund after the adjustments have been made. Are your folks in the room?
Yes, they are, all except for my staff.
Oh, okay. This wouldn't be a bad place to break, but we can go through one.
Let's continue.
Okay. The next, there is a Fish and Wildlife budget note I need to make sure that we point out. And this deals with requiring the department to make every effort to fill any positions that become vacant in this division in a timely manner, and not to use positions in this division to be backfilling in other divisions. This is some legislators have expressed concern regarding this potential. So that is a budget note that was included and approved by both co-chairs. The Human Resources division, which starts on page 5 of 43, first I should note that this division will be renamed, the department is planning to rename it the Administrative Services Division to reflect really what it does, mostly after the transferring of staff outside. The other, it provides the superintendent's office, the budget, finance, personnel, and some of those support functions, but its probably largest component in terms of staff is that the dispatch centers and the communication folks, the dispatchers, are part of this division. Package 070, there's three packages here that deal with criminal fines and assessment funding. The first package here reduces it quite a bit, as you've seen in Department of Justice budget and other budgets. Package 090 then removes all CFA-related positions and funding from the budget, but these are restored in package 096. So in terms of CFA funding, it is used by for training in the agency, supports four positions, and it is basically back to roughly 90% of what it was in the base budget. And that goes along with some of the other proposals in the governor's budget for things like the Department of Justice. There are five further positions cut in package 090 that have not been restored. Those positions plus the SNS that was cut in the governor's budget total $1.2 million. Package 101, again, recognizes transfers from one position to another. In this case, the package, there was a sergeant position transferred from patrol. This was a position that is the assistant commander of the SWAT team. This has been placed in this division, but to fund a portion of this position, or all of this position, the funding wasn't transferred from the division. It was removed from the agency. And it was the general fund required for this division was taken from an S&S category and moved up into personal services. So there's really a reduction from the department overall with this transfer. You'll see that happen in a number of occasions, most notably in the information management division when we get to that point, as a practice which just further creates holes in the services and supply areas of this budget. Package 102 is a series of, again, transfers, the same type of problem. This transfers in a major from the criminal division, but it is funded almost $300,000 in a reduction in S&S, and the $300,000 was captured for use elsewhere in the governor's budget outside of the state police. This package also increases the budget by $250,000 general fund to pay off some rent costs in 03-05 for the communications dispatch center out at the readiness center that you held a hearing on for during the joint process. You'll see that also in the information management division and the Office of Emergency Management, the same type of addition. Package 112, I mentioned that the debt service for the COPs for the intoxilizers or whatever they're called, I I thought they were intoxilizers, but that's a brand name.
Okay.
My mistake in that. This is the debt service and the issuance cost for those. Because of DAS and the department's efforts, there was identified just a bit over $100,000 that could be used to reduce the debt service general fund need. This is a similar action that happened in corrections where there was, I believe it was $2.4 million identified that could offset general fund debt service needs. This is a one-time reduction. Package 801 are the AG and PERS adjustments. Package 811 are the technical adjustments, and in for this division, it's an increase in other funds limitation for a grant that had not been factored in, totally factored into the governor's budget. You'll notice a large decrease in the general fund, and that's because all the rent was in this division, and it was reallocated out to patrol, criminal, fish and wildlife, and the other divisions. Package 812, again, is similar package to other divisions where the command staff or the field command staff and associated costs are transferred from the human resources, this division, out into the other divisions, and you see a net outflow of 36 positions and a little bit over $7 million. Again, that has no net general fund impact across the department. And finally, package 813 has a couple of issues in it. First issue is $300,000 is reduced, recognizing that the department will start doing their basic recruit training as part of the DPSST, and their training costs should go down some as a result of that. That it will happen later in the biennium. What also happens in this package is roughly $1 million is added to fund nine positions to eliminate nine double-filled positions. These are some of the infrastructure needs of the department, payroll, personnel, fleet management, maintenance, and facility management. These are functions that the department has to provide as an agency. They have been doing with double-filled positions, and this is recognizing that they do need those positions, and this does not fill all the double-filled problems that are facing the department. Please keep in mind that that the agency would likely have to, and probably most likely have to, keep a number of positions vacant across the department, probably both sworn and non-sworn positions, to pay for the S&S costs we've talked about, as well as these double-filled positions if these actions were not taken. Madam Chair, on the back to the memo on page 7, there are a series of budget notes on this page. The first one deals with double-filled and vacancies. A similar budget note, not completely similar, but of same nature, was in the this agency's budget last biennium or last session, and what it calls for is for them to return back to the emergency board to report on vacant positions, double-filled positions, and some specific information about each of those divisions. The next budget note is a budget note that I offered up, and it was approved by both the co-chairs. This recognizes the fact there are a number of programs that are non-general fund financed in the department, including fish and wildlife, lottery, gaming, marine board. And right now that general fund is used to provide support for those programs through personnel, accounting, budgeting, that type of thing. And what this does is instructs the department to work with DAS as well as our office in developing a system of allocating costs to programs that have non-general fund revenues. And then in terms of developing the next biennium's budget, the 07-09 budget, take that into account. And the final budget note for this division is a companion to the budget note or notes that was in the DPSST budget. It instructs the agency to integrate the recruit training into the basic DPSST training by January 1, 2007. What is different between this budget note and the DPSST budget note is it also requests the department to take a look at the need that they, whether they still need or what their needs are at Camp Rylea. They have a lease that they're paying a monthly lease payment on to Camp Rylea, and as the transition goes to DPSST, it's, I think, imperative the department take a look at what their needs are at Camp Rylea and whether that lease should continue in its present form.
What I'd like to do here, well, first, Superintendent, do you have, are you in agreement with the three budget notes that have just been reviewed, or have any brief comments on any of the three?
Madam Chair, I've got some brief comments on each of them, but I don't want to bog you down here in terms of your timing, so I'm sensitive to that.
You will not be bogging us down. We do need to get your comments or concerns on the record.
Okay.
After we hear those, I will close the hearing to for the purpose of taking up Senate Bill 850. Once we conclude that hearing, we will come back to your budget. But please go ahead.
With the Chair's permission, might I comment on the Fish and Wildlife Division budget note, which I didn't respond to before. That budget note is the one that says we won't hold fish and wildlife positions vacant
right.
at the expense of other, in order to fill other positions. It's important for me to get on the record that certainly we acknowledge the budget note. And as Mr. Wilson described, vacancy savings have been necessary in every division of the department, including fish and wildlife. And we had asked the legislature in this budget development cycle to help alleviate this reality by making infrastructure investments intended to reduce the need to hold positions vacant to finance our operating costs. We certainly appreciate the efforts being made in this budget cycle along these lines. While a small number of vacancies were necessary in the Fish and Wildlife Division in the current biennium, the resources allocated to Fish and Wildlife have remained in the division. And the only exception to that was when we went to the E-Board and with the emergency board's permission moved about $161,000 into another category of the department. But it's important to note the resources in Fish and Wildlife are being spent in Fish and Wildlife. We also must mention that past budget reductions have disproportionately impacted the staffing level of certain divisions, especially Fish and Wildlife. In 2003, we experienced a Fish and Wildlife budget reduction equivalent to 6 or 7 trooper positions, but we were required to lay off an additional 20 more Fish and Wildlife officers because all troopers in the department are in the same job classification. Thus, more senior officers with or without the passion or specialized training to work in Fish and Wildlife had to be assigned to Fish and Wildlife Enforcement to align with the funding stream that was there. This created a specific impact on Fish and Wildlife Enforcement that has not yet completely passed, although it was certainly dramatically improved. And at that time, the legislature expressed, and we shared, a significant concern that those assigned to Fish and Wildlife Enforcement be people with the appropriate level of training and experience for the jobs. And while our workforce is pliable, in these times of across-the-board budget reductions, it's nearly impossible to satisfy every competing interest. Notwithstanding all that, the agency will not fill other division positions at the expense of Fish and Wildlife Division, as mentioned in the budget note. It has been a budgetary necessity, actually, to fill these other fund positions, like Fish and Wildlife, whenever possible, because we've got dedicated revenue there and a shortage of general funds. So whether a person was your priority or not, and it is a priority, still the budgetary reality is you've got to fill the other fund position jobs, and we have made every effort to do that. Still, we have to have people who can do the fish and wildlife work. They have to be trained. They have to be in the physical location where the job needs to be done. And given the limitation on many families to relocate with the ebb and flow of the state's economy, it's almost next to impossible to achieve 100%. But we, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we will do our very best to meet with that budget note for all the reasons that the legislature put it in there, as well as some of our own. On human resources, very quickly, the first one, about coming back to the E-Board to talk about double fills and vacancies, absolutely, we agree with that. We'll be happy to report. The next one talks about the strategy to that Mr. Wilson explained, to apportion the costs, some of the costs for core services out to other divisions. And we certainly acknowledge the budget note. We will work with DAS and LFO as requested. I would like to state for the record, however, that we believe the effect of such a system disproportionately impacts the partners mentioned in the budget note. You know, the employees of the Fish and Wildlife Division and of the Gaming Division are state police employees first, with their division assignment being secondary. In the case of sworn troopers in particular, they have duties and responsibilities beyond their day-to-day requirement, and it's my understanding, as it's developed here over time, that the intended benefit of such a system is to free up general fund within the department's budget by pushing costs onto the budgets of these other partners. And we're concerned that the outcome of such a system may in reality be counterproductive. I know that the people in the Department of Fish and Wildlife are, and some members of the legislature are concerned about that as well. The state police should we believe the state police should continue to share the cost, both direct and indirect, of having a workforce trained and capable of accomplishing the overall mission of the department, not just a specific division. We do, in fact, use these people for operational needs outside their division, and that has always been one of the strengths of our structure in the Department of State Police. It's really how we've gotten by despite all the dramatic cuts we've had over the years. Again, we'll be happy to work with DAS and LFO in support of the budget note, and we look forward to that opportunity. Finally, with respect to the DPSST Academy, again, we certainly acknowledge the budget note. As we have stated in testimony and in a letter that I provided to this committee and to our stakeholders, we intend to be a full participant at the DPSST Academy. I do need to point out the budget note assumes, both in our budget and in the DPSST budget, that no limitation on facility or staffing at DPSST which could prevent this migration will occur. Or there could be some kind of facility thing crop up or some inability to hire staff that will make it just impossible for us to be there. Barring that, we're going to be there. The report mentioned in the budget note for us to come back and report on that, as well as the Camp Raleigh facility. We look forward to that, and we're happy to report as requested. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Very good. Appreciate very much those thoughtful comments, Superintendent. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5618 and open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 850. Senator Devlin, would you like to introduce the subject?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. What I'd like to do actually is, because I know that time is crucial here, this bill actually had four meetings in the Senate Judiciary Committee. So it has had extensive public hearings. What I would like to do is just enter some short testimony into the record, and then I think it has been organized for about three of the very supportive parties, and there is no opposition, to testify very shortly on their support for the bill, and that should actually conclude our public hearing.
Very good. Would the parties who plan to testify please come forward?
And I will just give a short introduction while they're coming forward. Madam Chair, I could say members of the committee, but I'm a member of the committee today. SB 850 creates an address confidentiality program within the Department of Justice. This program is designed to protect victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking who have relocated from having their address disclosed through public records. As a short background, this bill is modeled on the successful legislation and programs of 17 other states. The most recent bill is passed with unanimous legislative support in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Oklahoma, and Nebraska. Washington, our neighbor to the north, was the first state to implement a program. Its legislation also passed unanimously, and the program was first being accepting participants in 1991. As we all know, domestic violence is a very serious issue. On average, a woman will make 7 attempts before she is able to successfully leave her abuser. With each attempt, violence usually escalates, making this one of the greatest risk factors contributing to the serious injury or murder of the victim by the abuser. As we all know, persons attempting to escape from abuse frequently need to establish new addresses in order to prevent their abusers from finding them. This bill enables state and local agencies to respond to requests for public records without disclosing the location of the victim. The decision by a victim to leave an abusive situation puts her at greater risk. Currently, our state has few protections to lessen this risk. This program would make it easier for some victims to seek court protection. The act of filing for a restraining order or child custody requires court documents to be completed. In cases where the victim has taken extreme measures to conceal her location, she may be hesitant to make any steps that could reveal her whereabouts to her abuser. When a victim relocates, she is often leaving her job, the support of her friends, family, and community. She may face financial obstacles to completing this transaction. With everything the victim is trying to put in order, she should not have to face the added burden of contacting countless agencies to keep her new address confidential. An address confidentiality program provides victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking with a tool to escape her abusive relationship and end violence against her and or her family. It allows agencies to easily respond to public records requests in a manner, again, that does not endanger the victim. That's why we're bringing this bill forward today, and that's why we think it's very important to pass this legislative session.
Senator Devlin, thank you very much, and I appreciate your leadership on the subject. Ms. Washington, would you like to go first?
Thank you very much, Chair Gordley.
You want me to do a bill intro real quick?
Sure, and I'm going to defer to Ronell Shankly from the Attorney General's Office. Sorry, Chair Gordley. For the record, Ronell Shankly, legislative liaison here today on behalf of Hardy Myers, who was not able to be present. And we thank, too, Senator Devlin for bringing this important issue forward. You have my written testimony. As the members of this committee are well aware from the work with the Department, the Attorney General and the Department of Justice does support programs that assist victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking through various areas, this being one of them that we are interested in. As the Senator has already pointed out to you, a lot of research was done by his staff as well as members of the Department of Justice to look at other states. But an added note is not only did we look at those other laws, but we specifically reached out to those states and asked about lessons learned to find out how it's working. I think what you have before you demonstrates the best of those lessons learned, those other laws, and what would fit for the citizens of Oregon. So we're here in support, and you've got a couple of experts here that will tell you a little more.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity once again to speak on support of this bill. I'm Denise Washington, the Executive Director of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, and I also chair the Governor's Council on Domestic Violence. And OCADSV is, we are in support of this program. It's one of the many facets that is necessary to craft a coordinated community response to violence against women. And we would also like to acknowledge the leadership of Senator Devlin on this bill. It is very much appreciated. You did an excellent job of summing up in your testimony, as did Ronell. The joy of this bill is that it will allow survivors to utilize a substitute mailing address to receive mail. It keeps their physical address protected, and it also keeps abusers from using public records to find victims. This helps keep victims safe in their homes and to remain safe, and we view it as a critical component in a victim's ability to stay safe. The bill has broad-based support, and Oregon is very lucky to have an Attorney General's office that's supportive of this bill and willing to administer it, as well as rural and urban support. So I just want to, again, thank you for hearing this and urge that you pass it.
Ms. Washington, Ms. Hebb, good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Gridley and Senator Devlin and staff. Simple Hebb for the Oregon Law Center, and again, wanting to voice our support in of this bill. I'm also speaking today on behalf of the Legislative Alliance to End Violence Against Women, which is a network of urban and rural domestic violence and sexual assault counseling programs and resource programs across the state. This bill is identified as one of that group's highest priorities and greatest need because of the stories that they hear when victims seek their help and tell of the many attempts that they have made to relocate in order to stay safe from abuse. And so this program provides a consolidated and easy, accessible way for victims to maintain a measure of safety and to prevent the use of public records, our state's public records, as a means, as a tool of a batterer to prevent, to further perpetrate abuse. We've talked about the broad base of support, and I just want to specifically mention mention that we spoke with the went over the bills in detail with the Oregon District Attorney's Association as well as the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association and the Oregon Judicial Department. So those parties, as well as the Attorney General's Office and the Coalition, have been supportive, and we're grateful for that. I also just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that a number of people have submitted letters of support, and in your file you should see a letter of support from Dan Norris, who is the District Attorney in Malheur County, as well as Gina Skinner, who is a Deputy District Attorney in Washington County. Eric Bush, who is the Chief of Police in Prineville, has also submitted a letter of support, as has Aaron Ellis, who is the Executive Director of the Sexual Assault Resource Center in Washington County. And so I think that's another example of the broad base of support that we have. From the law center's perspective, victims from across the state have shared with us their stories of the times that they have gone to great expense and great disruption to try to relocate so as to achieve safety. And so we're grateful for your consideration of this program to help ease them in their attempts to stay safe. This bill won't solve all problems for victims, but it is a critical component, and we hope that Oregon will join the ranks of the other states, the 17 other states across the nation that have successfully implemented this sort of protection. So I urge your full support of the program, and I thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much to all of you, and again for all of your hard work. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did want to thank all of them for their hard work. Many of them have been actually constant visitors to my office. And I got in a little bit of trouble for this comment in the Judiciary Committee. It's like going back home and getting in trouble for comments. But Senator Hatfield has always made the case that his staff is what actually always made him look good. In this case, there could be no truer case than that. The vast majority of the work has been done by Ms. Rahala, not by this member.
Ms. Rahala, would you like to stand, please?
This is what got me in trouble last time.
And just be recognized for all of your work, your dedication, and your leadership as well. And also, please note that there is a seat waiting for you in the Legislative Assembly. Just pick one. Okay, great. Was there further testimony?
I don't believe so, Madam Chair.
All right. So thank you very much to the panel. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 850 and open a work session on Senate Bill 850. Senator
Dillon. Thank you, Madam Chair. We prepared an amendment to Senate Bill 850, and the purpose of the amendment was primarily just to reduce the fiscal impact of the bill slightly. That had not been requested by the co-chairs, but it was simply just an effort to make the impact of this a little bit less in this coming biennium. We do not anticipate the impact is going to be great. It will be probably somewhere in the $70,000 to $75,000 range over the biennium. In preparing that amendment, there have been some late discussion of a possible change in that amendment, and there's been discussion with LFO and with the Department of Justice and with the Legislative Council Office to just a conceptual amendment that the Legislative Council Office has okayed for this amendment. So what I'd like to do is to move that Section 18 of the A4 amendment be deleted.
Okay. Is that a motion?
Yes.
Okay. If there's no further discussion or objection, then that motion is adopted.
Now, Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 850A as conceptually amended by the conceptually amended -4 amendments to the Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation.
And if there is no further discussion or objection, the motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 850 and reopen the public hearing on, or I'm sorry, the work session on Senate Bill 5618.
Madam Chair, I will be back in about 60 seconds.
Okay.
They want to question the
And okay, Mr. Wilson, I believe we're ready to take up the Office of Information Management and the Law Enforcement Data System.
Madam Chair, actually, if it would be all right, I would like to skip over that division and come back to it because it relates to the other two bills on the agenda. I'd like to close with that division.
Okay.
So I'd like to move forward to the Gaming Enforcement Division, which is on page 33 of the table. The Gaming Enforcement Division really has three components. It's the boxing and wrestling regulatory responsibilities, the lottery responsibilities, and the tribal gaming responsibilities. In terms of packages, package 090, in terms of the governor's recommendation, was to delete all the general fund from this division, which had been going mainly for the boxing and wrestling, and also eliminate the position of that the position that was dedicated to boxing and wrestling. Since the time the governor's budget was put together, the agency feels now that there is sufficient fee and licensing revenue coming in to this program, more so than they thought 6, 7, 8 months ago, that the position can be established, but with other funds. So there is still no general fund associated with the position, but you'll notice that there was an $89,000 increase in the other funds. Package 801 are the AG and PERS rate reductions, and then finally on the next page, package 811 again is these technical adjustments on the most part, and in this case it's just some reallocation of rent issues, and in this case it's actually an increase in the rent for these offices, but it is all other funds. There is a budget note in terms of gaming enforcement. If you recall, the Joint Public Safety Subcommittee heard testimony from tribal governments on enforcement, and there was a budget note that was brought forward dealing with that, and the Oregon State Police is instructed to evaluate whether the current staffing level and type of staff utilized are correct for enforcing any of the laws relating to gaming activities and the compacts with tribal governments. We're asking, or the budget note, excuse me, is asking if they come back to an e-board after March 1st, 2006, after consulting with the governor's office and tribal governments. I should note that this really is not an issue alone for the state police. The compact is with really the governor's office and the state police. In matters like this, take a lot of lead from the governor's office on this compact. I found this out after talking to the staff involved with this program. That is the Gaming Enforcement Division, Madam Chair.
Let me ask a question here of the superintendent. Has there been a beginning discussion with the governor's office about this budget note?
Madam Chair, I personally have not spoken with the governor's office about this budget note. I intend to do so shortly. We, as you would expect, we certainly will work closely with the governor's office and the tribal governments and look forward to coming back to make the report as requested in the budget note. We'll do an excellent job of paying attention to this.
We appreciate those assurances. Please continue.
Madam Chair, the Office of Emergency Management Index is on page 35 of the table. This is one of the three divisions that had been proposed to move into the new Oregon Homeland Security Agency. As I've mentioned before, that agency is not assumed to be created in this budget plan, and so therefore you'll see that reflected in the work papers. Package 101 in this division transfers positions from this division of the state police to the information management division. This results from the sort of the combining of the staff of the Oregon Emergency Response System, or OERS, and the part of the LED staffing, therefore that so that the sort of the center, the response to both of these, which are manned, I think, almost 24 hours a day, it allows for greater flexibility there. The staff have joint responsibility. The positions are transferred with $141,000 general fund, but this is not the total cost of the positions. And you'll notice that when we get to the information management division, that the remaining costs of these four positions are funded with cuts, again, to services and supply. Package 150 is a number of enhancements to this budget that were proposed by the agency. Includes $41,500 for increasing the search and rescue program. The $41,500 was for upgrading radio equipment. There are also limitation increases for search and rescue program, federal limitation increase for additional money coming from FEMA, and it also the package, though you don't see it here, lines up the 911 expenditures into the proper spending categories. Our recommendation is to go along with all those other than the general fund increase. And in fact, in the governor's budget for the Office of Homeland Security, or the Oregon Homeland Security Agency, the $41,500 was not included either. Package 151, the governor proposed this package as the vehicle to move this division to the new agency. Since the new agency isn't part of the plan, you'll see that this package is reversed and going along with that. Package 801 are the typical AG and PERS reductions. Package 811, again, the more technical in nature changes. Beyond the smart buy savings, there are changes in the fund type from federal funds to other funds for the Emergency Management Performance Grant. And that also changes funding on 11 positions. And there is a continuation of a limited duration position that was mistakenly left out of the governor's budget. Package 812 is, I've mentioned before, the rent issue at the C4 or Readiness Center building. This is a $161,000 increase to resolve the 0305 rent issue. DAS has agreed to take that payment during the 0507 biennium to settle out. And also then on package 813 on the Oregon Emergency Management Division. This establishes two positions, recognizing that the Homeland Security responsibilities continue to rest in this agency. The current Homeland Security Advisor and a support staff, two positions are created here. I will note that the funding for this package differs from the House version because the agency came forward with some other funds to support a portion of these costs. So that is one issue that between the House and Senate will have to make sure is taken care of.
I have a request at this point, and Superintendent, I apologize that I didn't think about this when we were talking earlier up in my office, but I'm thinking about the recent tsunami alert. And I'd like to know, is there a report in preparation that tells us how the state responded to the recent tsunami alert, looking at what worked well, what didn't? If there is such a report document being prepared, could that be made available to legislative leadership and also to members of the public safety committees on the House and Senate side?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not certain what the status of an actual report is being developed. At the moment, I don't have oversight of OEM, but I have seen draft correspondence going back and forth about what worked, what didn't work, you know, different reactions and perceptions of the kinds of things that would go into the preparation of such a report, not seeing the final report. And I'm looking over my shoulder to see if anybody from the division is in here. Beverly Vanell will perhaps answer your question.
Thank you.
Do it together.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Gordley, members of the committee. There is an after-action report currently being generated, and once that is produced, I will forward it through the department to the committee for your review.
All right. And again, please include legislative leadership in that distribution, if you would.
Chair Gordley, yes, that we will include legislative leadership and do broad distribution of across all legislative members on the state of the tsunami activation and the varying levels of response that was achieved across the coastline.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I apologize to Beverly. Beverly Stillwell, not Beverly Vanell, recently married. I also like to, if I may at this moment, make a very brief comment about the Office of Homeland Security and the divisions, the three divisions of the state police that were proposed to go into the new office and which would appear at least a good possibility would be coming back. These men and women in these three divisions, the Office of Oregon Emergency Management, the Fire Marshal's Division, and Criminal Justice Services Division, as well as Beverly herself, outstanding, dedicated people committed to what they do, and they make a great difference for the people of the state of Oregon. And I certainly am sensitive to the fact that the ships were, you know, sent out to sea, and during the course of the legislative session, it appears that the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria are coming back to the state police, and I'll certainly welcome that if that's the way it works out. I know they feel like I do, which is together we'll get the job done for the people of the state of Oregon that they are committed to doing, and we'll make it work however it ends up. Thank you.
And we have every confidence that that will be the case. Thank you very much. Thank you. Please continue.
Madam Chair, that I think completes the Office of Emergency Management, other than the one issue on page 10 of the memo. I just want to make sure the members of the subcommittee, there are discussions still going along around emergency communications. I believe there's a bill, I think it is Senate Bill 817, that is still moving. It is in the Senate Budget Committee that would start to put some planning efforts together during 05 or during the upcoming interim, and would expect some significant financial needs identified probably for the 07 session. There are federal guidelines or regulations that the state must meet by, I believe it's 2012 or 2013, and there's quite a bit of work to do until that point or before that point. The next division is the State Fire Marshal. This is another one of the divisions that had been designated to go to the Oregon Homeland Security Agency. Package 150, it increases limitation and resources for a number of projects, including FireNet emergency communication system, the replacement repairs to the Urban Search Rescue Program that have been $19,650. Dollars of general fund. I'll come back to that in a second. Replace the Children's Fire Safety House, which is an educational tool that the division uses in terms of assisting or educating children around fire prevention issues and fire safety issues. Improvement of the fire code, as well as training.
Well, I didn't. It didn't burn down.
Well, I think it wore out.
Okay.
Thinking of a movie right now with Steve Martin in it. recommend approval of this package without with the exception of the $19,650 general fund. Again, the way the budget was created, the Office of the Homeland Security Agency also did not include this $19,650 in the governor's recommended budget. It shows up here because it was put in before this agency was division was moved out in the governor's budget. Package 151 reflects the proposal to transfer this division out. Again, it is our recommendation that that be reversed and it stays within the state police Package 801 are the AG and PERS adjustments. Package 811, the more technical nature changes. This is an increase in federal funds limitation that's unique to this division, based on more up-to-date information on grant streams. There's a small change, but those are offset in other changes, so you'll see negative values. Package 813 are some enhancements. I mentioned this before, coming in part from the fire insurance premium tax. Two deputy fire marshals are restored. These have been cut during the 0103 biennium, or in the 0305 biennium. These two deputy fire marshals will be located, are currently thought that they will be located in Bend and Roseburg. Again, there are further enhancements using fire insurance premium tax revenues for community fire prevention programs, fire net communication system maintenance, and incident management team training. In addition, two more positions, one dealing with the LPG or liquid petroleum gas program, as well as another position for the hazardous material program. Both of the funding streams for those two programs are sufficient to address the workload issues they have by adding positions. And, Madam Chair, I believe that is the State Fire Marshal Division. The only issue that I want to raise, which is on page 11, is that in the past, with the conflagration law, the agency has often or usually comes back to the emergency board for general fund. We would like them to explore the use of the fire insurance premium tax instead of the emergency board, but of course they can always come to the emergency board or request the appearance in front of the emergency board if they so wish. Criminal Justice Services Commission, again, this is the third division that would have been transferred. The governor's budget in package 150 recognizes the need for general fund in this budget. The money is added to meet the match. We have more up-to-date numbers than the governor had when they were putting the budget together a number of months ago, and so there's a small reduction reflecting what the actual need is. Package 151 just reverses what the governor proposed to move this to the new Homeland Security Agency. And finally, 811 has a significant increase in federal limitation, but this is all federal funds limitation based on better information on what the various grant streams that come into this division, what the more up-to-date information reflects on the availability of federal funds. Again, these funds, this is a division that distributes grant funds to a number of state and local entities for their various public safety, criminal justice-related grants. And, Madam Chair, I believe that is the remainder of that one, and then that would allow us to return to the Information Management Division. Mm-hmm. Senator Devlin, when you were out, we skipped over this because this is the division where the two other bills on the agenda are related to. The Information Management Division has really three major functions, and hopefully I'm not missing any. They are responsible for the LUD system. They're also responsible for the information management needs internally of the Oregon State Police, and in this division also is the Identification Services section. Package 70070 on page 28 of 43, this reduces expenditure limitation for the Identification Services or ID unit in the division to bring spending in line with what their anticipated revenues are. You'll notice that was a $3.7 million reduction. That does, it recognizes the availability of revenue that's actually available as the budget process was going along. It starts to show that the problem that they're facing. Package 090 is some additional rent, again related to 0305 that you've seen in a couple of divisions relating to the C4 readiness building out on State Street. 095 is the placeholder for the scenic project. Those The bill that is actually dealing with this, I believe, has passed out both of the House and Senate subcommittees, so it's on its way through the process. Package 101 includes a number of 13 reclasses that are internally financed and have been approved by DAS's Human Resource Services Division. This package also reflects the four positions transferred from the Office of Emergency Management to this in the combination of the ORS program and the LEDS program staff. Funding for this, the $141,000, is transferred to this division, but that only provides partial funding for those four positions. The rest is funded by S&S cuts, shifting to pay for the positions. Again, that's indicative of some various issue or various places in this budget that this creates further problems on the S&S budget. Package 102 establishes three positions. These were positions that had been double filled before in the wireless communications section. This is the staff that maintains the radio system, both in terms of the car radios and the radio towers. These had been double-filled during the current biennium. Again, the governor did not provide any funding for these positions, but reduced S&S funding and to move it to personal services. That same type of funding was done in Package 103 for the three positions that are associated with the Oregon Uniform Crime Reporting. This is these staff prepare and collect and analyze data that's required to be collected to receive many of the federal grants related to criminal justice that the state receives. During 03-05, funding for these positions had been a mix of funding that is no longer available. Package 150 just increases limitation for purchase of equipment, recognizing the funds that are coming in through the Criminal Justice Services Division for selected responsibilities. 801 are the PERS and AG reduction or adjustments. Package 811 recognizes funding that had not been included in the governor's budget for the National Criminal History Improvement Project. Package 813 is the last package in this division. It provides funding for two purposes: invest $1.6 million to fill the S&S shortfalls in this division. Much of that was caused by that funding new positions or transferred positions with S&S by cutting S&S. The second part of that, which relates to the two bills that are next on the agenda, deals with the ID services unit. There are $2 million of additional additional general fund put into this budget, as well as just shy of $1.2 million of fee revenue that is placed in this, that is included in this budget that come from the two bills. I think with that, Madam Chair, that it would probably either take action on the state police budget or put that aside and go through the other two budgets to make sure they pass out because they fund this budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let us go ahead and take action on this budget.
Okay.
It's in front of us. So, Senator Devlin, I'll take that motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 5618 as amended to the full Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
If there is no further discussion or objection.
Madam Chair, I will assume that the performance measure information is also part of that.
It is part of the motion.
Okay.
This wasn't part of the script. So.
At this juncture, let me stop, though, for the record, and ask the superintendent if you have any further comments on the performance measures.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, we don't.
Madam Chair.
Senator Devlin.
Before we get to the final motion on the budget, I did want to, you have said this a number of times, Madam Chair, about a concern about long-term stable funding for the state police, and I share that concern. And we are soon going to complete probably another session without a dedicated source of funding particularly for the patrol services of the state police. And I hope we don't go another session without addressing that issue. But the superintendent, when he came here for our first meetings, made it very clear that the morale of his officers was high. And I would hope that morale would stay high and that they would know that there are still people in this building working.
Thank you. Senator Devlin, I appreciate those comments. Some of the comments certainly echo some of my thoughts, although I will say that we are still here. The legislature is still in session, and we still have the opportunity to craft that dedicated funding source for the Oregon State Police. There are several ideas out there, including an auto insurance surtax, including adding to the gas tax. These are all things that can happen if we apply political will to make it happen. So that is our challenge, and I know that the two of us on this panel are willing to be a part of leading that fight. But again, I want to establish that we're still here, and I appreciate Superintendent, your dedication, which is a reflection of the dedication of all of the fine men and women who serve Oregonians through their work with the Oregon State Police. I think we just have to be very clear about where we are, and the legislature has failed up to this date to keep faith with the men and women who provide that service by providing the necessary funding and resources that ensure that the troopers who are out there on the roads, for example, are safe and have the backup that they need and deserve as they're doing those jobs. And we have failed to provide the resources that allow the department to function as a to the highest possible standards. We are at a place in this state where we seem to be resting on mediocrity. That is not to say that the people who work in the department are mediocre. I am not saying that, but I'm saying that there's something wrong with the quality of leadership, collective leadership in this building that continues to ignore, walk away from our responsibility to adequately fund the state police. And a part of that inability to adequately fund is tied to the inadequacy of our revenue system. The Oregon State Police are looking at an inadequate budget, just like the Oregon Youth Authority, just like the Department of Corrections in some aspects, just like the Department of Education, just like on down the line, because our system of collecting revenue is inadequate. And until we address that need for stability and funding, then we're going to be where we are. But again, that's our challenge, and we're still here. So all of that to say that we fully appreciate the role, Superintendent, that you play in holding up your branch in the administration of justice. Sure. And we honor that role that you play. And I believe that we are ready to move this budget with no further discussion.
Yes.
And certainly no objection. And now we need to move to the, is it 954,
yes,
state police fee bill. And I'll open that public hearing and
Madam Chair,
work session.
If you could, I would actually like to present some information on this There are people signed up for hearing, but if I could set the stage to a certain extent with the memo in front of you.
Okay.
Let me make sure it's available.
All right.
Do we have the House bill also?
What?
Do we have the House bill also? Or is that...
There is no House bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
It's read something on Marisha Claims late that we talked about. Okay. I've got 9.4.
There's two different things with this.
Oh, okay.
One is your statutory or something.
Okay.
I'll
go through
that.
Okay. Because I'd love to wait today.
Are you ready, Mr.
Yes. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's a memo in front of you. When we went through the Information Management Division, I mentioned the ID services section. This is the part of state government that maintains databases and information relating to fingerprints and criminal records for a variety of and also provide a variety of actions in terms of background checks prior to a sale of firearm, prior to hiring potential employees for a variety of employers or volunteers. In addition, they coordinate with the coordinate fingerprint checks with the FBI. Over the past biennia, as with the rest of the department, this section has lost general fund revenues. And as they have done that, they've cut back staff. The staff is, I think, 8 or 9 positions less than it was at its peak. I'm guessing at that. I think it was, it's now at 73. And during 2003-2005, they were able to make it through that biennium because of significant vacancy savings in some of the other divisions as troopers and others were laid off and then hired back and laid off. That process did generate vacancy savings that were pushed to this program. In addition, this section increased the fees effective March 1st on those fees that are administratively increased. And those fees are in effect only in effect in 2005-2007 if you pass Senate Bill 5628. In addition, there are fees. If you turn to the next page, there are fees that we'll call statutory fees that are related to Senate Bill 954. They're the concealed handgun fee, expungements, and firearms fees. These fees are either at their maximum statutory limit or require statutory change at any point in time. What you see here are three columns between the two. The pre-March fee is what was in effect before March 1st. The current fee is what is being paid as of today, including those fees, the administrative fee increases that are currently in effect, but without the passage of Senate Bill 5628 would revert back to the pre-March level. At the beginning of the biennium, or nearly at the beginning of the biennium. And then the third column is the proposed fees that we're recommending in the two bills that reflect the limitation and reflect what's in the Senate co-chair's plan for the Oregon State Police. So you'll see that the March fees are partially rolled back, so they're not increasing as much as they were, and that there would be, of the statutory fees, there would only be an increase in the firearms from the current $10 to $13. What these fees are structured in the proposed column is, in this division, there are sort of direct costs and indirect costs. The indirect costs are primarily the cost of keeping up the databases, updating the information in those databases. The direct costs are those costs that are associated with a specific program or actually a specific request of someone calling in or the processing of a specific request. The proposed fees are roughly designed to cover the direct costs, and general fund will cover the indirect costs of the program. The Senate the budget you just passed put another $2 million into this program. With that $2 million increase in general fund and these proposed fees, it returns the program to within about $500,000 of its essential budget level, or what they think they need to be operating at. The consequences of not increasing fees or increasing revenues generally this program are backlogs in requests, longer waiting times, as well as the risk of not having the files updated with the most current information about people's criminal records, and both to the positive nature and to the negative nature of those records. So that provides you a little background. The top administrative fees relate to 5628. The bottom three fees represent the statutory fee that are outlined in Senate Bill 954.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. We have three folks signed up to testify, and I'd like you all to come up. Rod Harder, Kevin Starrett, and David, is it Yandel? Please come forward. And if you'll speak in the order that I called your names.
Madam Chair.
And I'm going to allow each of you about 3 minutes.
For the record, I'm Rod Harder, the Oregon consultant for the National Rifle Association. I will not take a great deal of time. I'm here today in opposition to Senate Bill 954, and I am just slightly confused over counsel's recent statements about the proposed fee, because as I read this bill, the fees on the checks, background checks for handgun purchases, go from $10 to $25, and we certainly are opposed to that. Have no comment as far as the motions for setting aside a conviction. We would oppose again the fingerprint increase in fingerprint prices to 40, which is a 47% increase, and 150% increase in the fees for background checks. For the record, we spent about $750,000 putting this program, attempting to keep this program from going into effect, and we certainly are not going to support any fee increases to support a program that we don't particularly care for. And again, for the record, I'm certainly not anti-law enforcement. As you well know, Senator Gorley, my history of supporting game detail goes back 20-odd years. So with that, I'll close my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Harder, and it's good to see you this afternoon. Sir?
Chair Gorley, Senator Devlin, David Yandel, I'm the Director of the Information Management Division for the Oregon State Police. With your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to read a brief testimony that I believe you've all been given a copy of. Covers essentially how we got here with Senate Bill 954, in addition to what Mr. Wilson has already helped you with. The Department of State Police introduced Senate Bill 954 as a component part of a funding package required as a result of a loss of general fund support of our Identification Services section, which I'll be referring to as ID Services. ID Services provides Oregon criminal history record information and background checks required by law. Over the last two biennia, ID Services has experienced the loss of general fund revenues, which previously funded core criminal identification and central state repository functions, allowing fees for all other ID services functions to remain low. As general funds decreased, our dependency on other fund revenues increased. To mitigate the resulting revenue shortfall for the remainder of the 03-05 biennium, the department was left with two options. One, to increase revenues to cover the cost of providing mandated services, or two, to decrease expenditures to align with available revenues, which would also result in decreased services. In anticipation of no new general funds for the 05-07 biennium and to stabilize the ID services budget for the remainder of the 03-05 biennium, the department developed a budget strategy built on the premise of fully funding ID services through fees for service. The methodology incorporates both direct and indirect costs, in particular those previously funded using general funds. The methodology also requires the department to adjust applicable fees set in administrative rule as well as those set in statute. On January the 6th of this year, the Department of State Police appeared before the Legislative Emergency Board requesting state general fund assistance to supplement a proposed change in fees to those services whose fees are set in administrative rule. On March the 1st, 2005, as Mr. Wilson shared with you, the department filed temporary administrative rules modifying the following fees for services. For copy of own record, the fee was proposed to be changed from $12 to $33. Clearinghouse background checks from $12 to $52. Open records, which is a public name check, from $15 to $10. It was our only reduction. Public fingerprinting from $5 to $20. Authorized non-criminal justice name checks from $2 to $4. And authorized non-criminal justice fingerprint checks $12 to $28 for those where the fingerprint cards are not retained and $15 to $27 for those where the fingerprint cards are retained. On February the 21st of this year, Senate Bill 954 was introduced for the express purpose of adjusting the following fees for service set in Oregon revised statute. For expungements, the fee was proposed to change from $80 to $89. For concealed handgun permits, from $15 to $22. And pre-sale firearms checks, from $10 to $25. And I might add that that is a cap already set in statute. And as of March the 1st, we did adjust that cap from $9 to $10. Senate Bill 954 is critical to the department and specifically to ID services in that it provides $3,810,540 of the $11,081,964 required to sustain the current staffing level necessary to perform mandated services for the 05-07 biennium. Without the bill or some other source of funding, the department is left with no choice but to reduce expenditures and or eliminate services. The department respectfully requests the committee support of Senate Bill 954. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Yandell.
Madam Chair, for the record, Kevin Starrett with the Oregon Firearms Federation, and I to say I share Mr. Harder's confusion about exactly what you're planning to do here, because I just seen this memorandum that was handed out mere moments ago, and I don't know what the ultimate goal is, but I do want to say that the Oregon Firearms Federation will be opposed to any increases in fees for gun owners, since these are fees that we don't want in the first place. It's not a service we've asked for. It was a service, or rather it was a liability that was imposed on us, much the way a fee would be charged for you to write a letter to the editor or to worship in your church, because we consider these things to be a right. Certainly, 150% increase in a fee is outrageous compared to the 11% that's mentioned for this other function in this bill. I'm not really sure if I'm reading this memorandum correctly, but it would appear that some of the administrative fees are going down. And if that's not correct, I apologize, but that's what it looks like looking at the current fee versus the proposed fee. And if that's the case, certainly going to oppose fees dropping for other people to be funded on the backs of gun owners. So for the record, we oppose any increase in fees, and certainly the fees that are mentioned in the original Bill 954 we consider to be totally inappropriate and outrageous. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Starrett, and again, thank you to the panel. Mr. Wilson?
Madam Chair, let me hopefully clear up any confusion or whatever. Again, going back to the table, the pre-March fees were those in effect, of course, pre-March. As Mr. Yandell mentioned, the agency was able to raise administrative fees. Those are listed at the top of the table, which then raised them effective March 1st to what the current fee is. Now, that ability to, or the authority for the current fee to continue, takes ratification under the Senate Bill 333 process to have that continue into the 05-07 biennium. So if Senate Bill 5628 is not passed, those fees revert back to the pre-March fee. So what, and then the third column is what the budget plan or the budget that was just adopted in the state police is based on. So in that case, for those administrative fees, for example, the clearinghouse fee at the top, it increased from $12 to $52 on March 1st. But what the budget plan assumes and what we're recommending is that that $52 be brought down to $28 instead of returning all the way back to $12 or staying at the $52 range. As I said before, these are roughly put at levels that cover the direct costs of the program and not the indirect across all of these. There are some exceptions to those because the proposed fees do not, we did not reduce any fees that were currently in place prior to March 1st. We kept those at the same level. Some of them are paying a little bit more than what their direct cost would be. So those are what the proposed fees are, what we're recommending for both House Senate Bill 5628 and Senate Bill 954, because that's what's assumed in the OSP budget in terms of revenues.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. And again, thank you to the panel. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 954 and open a work session on Senate Bill 954.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 954 to the Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation, unless there's some change to it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to make sure, because it does amend the bill significantly. I'm asking for a conceptual amendment based on the fees, the last three fees on the proposed fee. And if you take a look at the bill, the only fee that you're really changing is the firearms fee that increases from the current $10 that's found on page 7 of the bill on line 26. And so that would be, instead of increasing to $25 per record check, it would be $13. And that reflects a direct cost. The other two fees would not be increased because they're already covering the indirect or the direct costs of the program. So really this bill reduces significantly to section 3 of the bill and one subsection of section 4 of the conceptual amendment.
Madam Chair, I modify my motion to indicate that I move to recommend Senate Bill 954 as conceptually amended by the whole record. Conceptual amendments given to us by Mr. Wilson to the Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. And again, just for clarity for the record, the conceptual amendment language is captured in the background information document prepared by Mr. Wilson, our legislative analyst, and dated June 28, 2005. It is a document related to Senate Bill 954 and Senate Bill 5628. And without further discussion, hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 5628.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on this bill, again, it's a conceptual amendment. It would be basically adopting the fees on the top portion under administrative fees for clearinghouse, copy of own record, open records, public fingerprinting, record checks, regulatory non-retained, and regulatory retained in the proposed fee column. The effect of that will be that the fees will be reduced from the current fee structure, but increased from the pre-March fee amounts that they would revert to if the bill did not pass.
Okay. Mr. Senator Devlin.
Madam Chair, I move the recommendation from LFO as voiced by Mr. Wilson.
If there is no further discussion or objection, the motion is adopted.
And that, Madam Chair, do you want a motion on the bill itself?
Yes.
Now, I move the bill as conceptually amended to the Senate Special Committee with the due pass recommendation.
If there's no further discussion or objection, the motion is adopted. Senator Devlin, would you be willing to carry the two
e-bills?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right. And Mr. Wilson, I'll carry the budget bill. Is there any further business for the good of the order?
Tomorrow's agenda is DPSST,
right,
which I believe is your final budget.
Okay. All right.
should remind everyone that tomorrow is also Ms. Myers' day.
Oh, right. Let's make this official. Diane Myers, today is her last day? Today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow is tomorrow.
And you are going to be enjoying some new employment with the Workers' Comp Board. And we just want to thank you for your dedication and support of this committee, your sense of humor, and the cups of tea. Thank you very much, and all the best to you. And we're adjourned.